Well, welcome back to part two of the morass of figuring out your way around college financing. I hope we haven't depressed most of you in the first half of the program. I want to reintroduce everyone on our panel. With us today, we have Ryan Williams. Ryan is director of the Office of Financial Aid Assistance at Boston University and has been there since 1996. Also with us is Mike Bartini. Mike is director of financial aid services with the College Board, the creators of the profile, as we've been talking about earlier. And Mike's been with the College Board for the last 15 years. Also with us in the studio is Andrea Glovsky with Work Family Directions, who is Digital's vendor in providing family resource services for work-life connections. And Andrea is director of education and college counseling and is a college counselor with them and probably is one of the sources of the eclectic series of information and experiences. I want to take a second and remind you of a few phone numbers that you can use and ways in which you can gain further information beyond what we've been able to make available for the program today. One of the key resources that you can reach out to and to analyze your particular circumstances and questions would be through Work Family Directions, which can be reached at 800-635-0606 and asked to speak with somebody on the College Counselor group about particular circumstances. And I know, Andrew, you have a wide range of tools, information, tip sheets.
Something that you can have us figure out what your expected family contribution is, sort of a reality check ahead of time.
And I know also, Mike, you particularly gave us a phone number and some ways of getting information regarding the profile for parents that perhaps are just realizing that profile information is going to be due fairly shortly.
Yes, if you determine that you need to register for profile, you can call 1-800-776-6888, or you can visit our College Board website at www.collegeboard.org. When spelling out College Board, it is all one word.
Thank you, Mike. Well, in the first half, we took a look at what went into the profile. We took a look at the assets. We took a look at the impact of debt. We took a look at the way the federal government kind of configures the FAFSA form, and I think the way the private institutions and certainly the public institutions use some of that information to try to struggle their way through with making those tough decisions. I think we've alerted most of the listeners out there with certainly incoming freshmen this coming year that some of the deadlines will be coming up very, very shortly, and that it is critical for them to at least get as good numbers onto paper and to get those applications in as quickly as possible, considering that many of the schools go on a first-come, first-served basis in dealing with their monies, and that becomes very important. So let's kind of fast forward for a second, say now that we're taking a look at the financial aid package, what does a financial aid package look like? I mean, what do people get in the mail and what's on that form? Andrea, can you give us kind of an overview?
It's really interesting because we talked, as I said, we talked to parents all over the country, and basically they all contain the same items. They contain federal grants, college scholarships, loans, and work study. And each school makes its offer based on that expected family contribution, whether it's using the institutional methodology or whether it's using the federal methodology. Remember, though, as Ryan and Mike both reminded us, federal dollars come from the FAFSA, or the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. That is the only thing they can use to determine federal dollars. All their other monies, those institutional dollars that BU has from endowment and however else they choose to raise it, and all the other colleges in the country who have wonderful resources for scholarships, those dollars they can determine all by themselves as to how they want to spend them. Which brings out a very interesting thing. Ryan, how do you decide to balance those little packages of who gets scholarships and who gets loans and who gets work study? We know how federal dollars are determined. That's straight government. But what happens with that money that BU wants to give away to bring kids to Boston University?
Well, certainly the majority of our dollars are going to be distributed based on a family and a student's financial need or financial aid eligibility. Boston University and, of course, institutions have varying institutional budgets, but let me just use BU as an example. At Boston University, for the 1998-99 academic year, the year where we'll be beginning in September. We will distribute approximately $100 million in undergraduate funds, probably about $130 to $150 million if you add graduate students to the pool. But specifically looking at undergraduate aid, it's about $100 million. The majority, the vast majority of that is going to be based on this information we've been talking about here all night regarding the FAFSA, regarding the profile form, and a student's financial or family's financial need or financial eligibility as determined by the two methodologies we've been describing. At Boston University, we do also have a substantial academic-based or merit-based pool of funds to award as well. Determinations on those are a combination of information that the admissions office may receive, as well as other offices on campus who may do some of the determinations and nominations, and then are fed through our office as part of the financial aid award. But again, the majority of aid through our office is going to be based on financial need. Different institutions will do it differently. Merit aid is certainly a part of the puzzle these days, and it behooves a family or student to know specifically which institutions are offering what types of dollars so that you can make sure that you are covering yourself in all application processes, and there may be certain external or supplemental applications for some of the merit programs. So different institutions will do it differently.
There are a lot of rumors about things that there are some colleges that will give discounts, other colleges that will use their financial aid dollars, their own college money to recruit students, maybe some of the, maybe not the top tier schools or the top, 150 schools, but there are schools along the way that really are trying to recruit some students and may tend to use some of their packages by saying, instead of giving you loans, I'm going to give you all scholarship dollars just to bring better students into the school. And we hear that that actually does happen. It may not happen. It may not be what BU chooses to do, but there are schools that we hear do this. Parents have to ask a lot of questions.
It certainly does happen. Different institutions do it for a variety of reasons. There are some institutions who are truly out there trying to recognize the merit and academic talent, or other talent for that matter, musical talent, fine arts talent of some type, or recognize a terrific chemistry student. But there are institutions out there who are attempting to recognize the quality of students that are applying to their institutions. Other institutions, of course, are using it for different reasons, in terms of trying to leverage their dollars, or in terms of trying to maximize their enrollment pools, and all the kinds of terms that I'm sure you've all heard about when it comes to some of the enrollment management that's going on today. It certainly is out there. It's a piece of the puzzle these days, and as you've said, it is important that families know the type of aid that they're receiving and why they're receiving it, because obviously that then plays a role in the next 3 years that student may be at that institution.
I also tell parents never to look at the bottom line. Always look at the pieces of the pie and compare them, because two numbers at the end may look very different as to what the schools are offering, but one may be primarily scholarship dollars and the other may be primarily loans, work study, and other things. And so you really have to study and really balance out what you're getting. We have a few families that will be listening to us from California, and I always tell parents to be careful when you're looking. Our California schools are having some real problems at this time, and it's taking students 6 and 7 years to get through their school, to finish at one of the UC schools, because they can't get their courses in their major. And you may get a financial aid package for 4 years. You can't get some Stafford loans after 4 years. They run out. How are you going to finance those extra 3 years, and is this really a bargain? And what is? So I tell parents to really look carefully at the long-term picture as to what that bottom line means and whether it looks like they're going to get it for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to study this package and compare their 4 or 5 schools carefully. It's hard. It's a real hard one. We're happy to discuss that with them on the phone and help them balance some of that out, but it is a tough order.
So you have some schools that have merit scholarships, or merit based on academic excellence or some other things. And then you hear the term grants. What's the difference between merit and grant? And then you go into the loan programs and the work-study programs.
That's a great question, because They're different institutions, just have different terminology, quite honestly. If I had to sort of lay something out on the table and say, for the most part, and I certainly can be wrong about this, I've worked for three or four different institutions, and different institutions will do it again differently. It's been a theme of my comments tonight. Different institutions do it differently. But for the most part, grants are probably defined in general terms as gift aid that is typically based on financial need, whereas scholarships, again, gift aid, by gift aid I mean money that doesn't have to be repaid, typically doesn't have to be worked for or earned. Scholarships are typically based on maybe an academic talent, a merit scholarship, something such as that. But both, for the most part, I mean, both are gift aid, the good dollars that people like to talk about. And then, of course, within a financial aid package, I think Andrea mentioned the makeup of grants, work, and loan. Work programs, there are a variety of work programs. Probably the best known is the Federal Work Study Program. It's a need-based, federally subsidized work program. Where students can earn dollars on campus to help out, be it for tuition bill, be it for personal expenses, but transportation
directly
costs.
Directly. It doesn't come off their tuition
Correct.
Bill like the other.
And that is a very confusing aspect at many institutions because it is something that's paid directly to the student. Unlike the scholarships and grants, and in many cases the loans,
so it doesn't come off the
it
tuition.
Does not come off the tuition bill. It's money that's put directly into the student's hand, and it's up to mom and dad and the student to help decide how those funds are going
to pizza.
Be. How those funds are going to be used. And then, of course,
they don't send the checks to the parents.
It is too bad.
Well, it's only minimum wage dollars, so
Some work programs can be very lucrative, and lucrative meaning I've seen some of the programs at BU, for example, can pay upwards of $10 and $12 an hour. It depends on the position and, in many cases, the level of the student and the type of position. But for the most part, Andrew, you're right. You're talking
freshmen. Have to take their work study? Do you
No.
have to take it if it says work study?
You do not.
Could you choose to go work at a restaurant and earn money instead?
Yes, okay. You can.
Does
you
that
can.
Hurt you for aid next year?
Another very good question. Work study, because it's a federal aid program, the next year when you're completing the FAFSA form, you can deduct, you can subtract out, exclude earnings from federal work study so that it's not a part of, as we described earlier in the program, we described the makeup of your income. Work study can be deducted out of that, excluded from the makeup of your total income. For the student who chooses to forego their work study and go and find a job at the local supermarket or at the burger joint or whatever the case may be, that money is just as plain old income. It's money that would be included in the makeup of the total income. And of course, depending on the dollar amounts, can have an impact on future years.
I want to pause for a second and let the audience know that in the next couple minutes we'll be start to take some questions. And if you do have a question for our studio panel, all you need to do is to press 1-4 on your phone, and Tanya will be able to know that you are wanting to stand in queue for a question, and we'll be turning to questions in a couple minutes. When we take a look at the impact of scholarship, this is the time where everybody's running around using the databases. They're applying for all those scholarship monies that the schools want to give out from the local cleaners and the Rotary clubs and so forth and so on, and perhaps even some of the big scholarship money that may be awarded through various institutions and nonprofit organizations. How does that play into this whole figure for students? Mike?
The first thing I encourage is that families search out every resource possible. If there is something in your local community having to do with your church or civic organization that you think you might be eligible for, please contact those individuals, find out the application process, and make sure that you get in line for those as well. Most high schools at graduation give out a fair number of awards, and you need to seek that information out from the guidance office in your community. So the first thing is that make sure that if you think there's something out there you're eligible for, make sure you apply for it. And like everything else, don't be late, because I'm sure somebody else will be ahead of you, and you don't want to be cut out just based on the fact that you were late with your application. There are, as Bruce mentioned, there are lots of scholarship search engines out there that you can feed criteria into and about yourself, your likes, your dislikes, your particular particular academic majors that you're interested in. And those particular database sources can give you some leads as to potential scholarships. My only advice these days is that there are opportunities for you to do this at no cost or at a very low cost at a maximum. And you should not be paying lots of money to do this. Because of the resources out there available to do it free. So families should look for all sources of financial aid, apply for sources of financial aid, and hopefully you'll receive some. Now, getting to Bruce's question, what happens when you get them? Well, there's a timing issue involved here. And the timing issue is that you're needing to make a decision as to what school you're going to go to most often by May of this upcoming this particular year. And for many of these scholarships, they will not award the scholarships until graduation or sometime after. So you've got a financial aid award in your hands, and at the time that financial aid award was given to you, there was no indication that there were outside resources. Now more resources have come into the picture. The first thing you need to do is you need to contact the institution, and the institution will determine what happens to those resources in the bigger picture of looking at your financial aid package. In some cases, they may have to modify your financial aid package, meaning that they may have to modify your grant or your loan amounts or both if your total need has been met. And in some cases, they can allow you to keep it. Because remember, the rules for federal aid say that you can receive no more than what you're qualified for. So if you're already receiving the maximum amount of financial aid and you get additional financial aid on top of that, something has to go.
But can a school choose to say, okay, you don't, instead of a loan, you can keep your grant? And if some schools, isn't it worth talking to a financial aid office first and say, wait a minute, I really, taking all these loans, couldn't I just use it this year because it's a one-time thing to reduce my loans? Would BU consider that sometimes?
Absolutely. I think
that's an individual school thing.
I think it's an individual school call, but the bottom line, I think that by bringing in these additional funds, even if it ends up adjusting your financial aid in some capacity, let me take that back and say that most schools that I'm aware of probably are not going to take your total outside award and totally reduce your scholarships and grants. There may be need to do so in certain circumstances, but for the most part, that's not what happens. Most institutions, at the worst, are going to partially reduce some of your scholarships and grants and then partially reduce some of your loan or work offers. And so even by bringing in those dollar amounts, even if you end up losing a bit of your institutional dollars, there is an obvious benefit to less loan and less work.
I have one statement to make. Work Family does have a very strong stand about scholarship databases, and you all need to know that we feel very strongly that no one should pay for any scholarship database. We stand behind what the U.S. government has said, that there is no reason to pay anybody for a scholarship database. My College Board has FundFinder right on their collegeboard.org website. And, I mean, that's a perfectly good database. That's databases in many schools. Go to your library. Go to your college. They're everywhere for free. Don't spend dollars. You don't need to spend money on, you know, you get solicited from anywhere from $49.99 to $500, we're hearing now. Don't spend dollars on that. Save your dollars for books, sneakers, whatever else. It's better spent.
What's on College Finder, Mike? I mean,
FunFinder. FunFinder is a...
And that's F-U-N-D, not F-U-N.
Well, it depends.
Or is it a different internet site?
FunFinder is a scholarship database that the College Board owns and operates and updates annually. It was started several years ago in conjunction with a couple other organizations, and we continue to maintain it from year to year. The important part, for instance, in our scholarship database is that we do update the scholarship database each year, so the information there is as current as it possibly can be.
Great. Tanya, do we have any questions waiting for us out there?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, you will need to press the 1 followed by the 4 on your push-button phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. And as a reminder, this call is being recorded. One moment, please, for the first question. Dave Kreiner with Cleveland, Ohio, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm interested in hearing your comments around a topic that's been discussed in a lot of the magazines that you read, and that is the process of negotiating with the various financial aid officers around your aid package and the benefit, and benefit in quotes, I guess, of applying to many schools so that you can leverage one against the other.
You must have been reading an article that Andrea wrote, I think.
Ryan, you want me to answer that and save you the difficulty. I'm talking from a perspective, a very different perspective. I don't represent any college in the country. I talk to only parents, and I hear what they do. I tell parents if they have something new to share with schools, if they have extenuating circumstances, additional information, they could go back to the school and say, you didn't give me enough aid. These are the reasons I need additional aid, and have something legitimate to say to them, not just, oh, you know, Colgate gave me 10 and Skidmore gave me 8 and I want, you know, 10 from you. That doesn't work. Colleges aren't going to just do it to get you to come to their school unless they're at a level of school where they're really into heavy recruiting and it's part of their public relations to fill their class or whatever else they need. But negotiation really is not really negotiation. It's sharing extenuating circumstances or additional information. Does that sound right, Mike? Ryan, am I way off base?
I think you're right on target. Most institutions are going to in their own literature and in their own offices, differentiate between a negotiation and an appeal. And an appeal is, as Andrea has described, an appeal is, as Andrea has described, it's offering changes in circumstances, new information, supplemental information, and the like. At most institutions, faxing or submitting a financial aid award letter from another college or another institution is really not going to get the job done. The first question that I would ask is, did this institution have different information in order to make the decision? And if they didn't, then in most circumstances, for all intents and purposes, we're going to stick by our financial aid award. And after all, we are making the award based on the need of the family and on the academic merit of the student. And unless the circumstances have changed, and the circumstance there, I won't bore you right now with all the detail, but you can ask your financial aid office what kinds of data, what kinds of circumstances do they want to be aware of that may result in a changed financial aid award.
I mean, even extreme debt that was suddenly incurred for some unusual thing that's happened in your life. You live in Maine and you didn't have power for 3 weeks and you've lost all kinds of stuff. I mean, anything that would change, your mother is very ill, whatever makes you look different than the day you filled that out, I think is a better, I think appeal is a really good word. I hope that helps you, Cleveland, Ohio.
That help you, Dave?
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Tanya, do we have another question?
John Gergely, Westboro, Mass. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, John.
Yes, I recently received a CSS acknowledgement because I filled out the profile information, and some of the information that I sent was missing, specifically home debt. There's a question mark there. I can't believe I would have left that out somehow, but it is missing. But the instructions say that I need to contact each of the schools individually. Is that true?
John, that's correct, unless, of course, we made a mistake. And so if you can go back, did you keep a copy of your original form?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. You have one of two ways of handling it. If you didn't keep a copy, what you can do is you can, on that acknowledgement form, the data confirmation report that you have, make the correction, copy it, and send it to the institutions in question. That's probably the quickest way to do it.
Okay.
If you're certain that we made a mistake, you could call us up and we could identify that, and then we could go through the process of reissuing that data. But truthfully, if you do it tomorrow, put it in 3, 4, 5 envelopes, you'll have it to the financial aid offices probably quicker.
Okay.
Next question. Tanya?
John Sterner, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello?
Yes.
Thank you. This is a continuation of the question that was first asked about the negotiation. I've heard that there, and I've looked for it on a FAFSA form, but I don't see it, that there is a box or something that is checked, maybe this is on the profile, that asks whether or not you are going to apply for more than one institution. And I'm wondering if that's really something significant. In other words, you know, instead of specifying just one college as the explicit place that I would be, or my daughter would be applying for. Is that clear?
On both forms, the FAFSA and the profile, you have the ability to add additional schools so that those schools receiving the data, for the most part, can see the other institutions you're applying to. So if you need to apply to more than one school, for sure, you've got to list those institutions, and I think that's the most appropriate thing to do.
But there would be no benefit in a decision factor, whether or not the financial office was looking at, are they applying for more than one school?
Probably not, because most institutions recognize that at the point that you're making an application, you haven't been admitted. So you've got to sort of hedge your bets as well and determine what the admissions process may or may not bring, and you're going to cover your basis. Now, if you're talking about early decision, we're talking about a totally different picture here. But if you're talking about regular admission, it's understood that families apply to more than one institution or can apply to more than one institution.
Should apply to more than one institution.
And unless it's an extreme circumstance, I would agree with Andrea.
Now, the other point that I understand that's related to that is that oftentimes the review of the financial aid process and the need is there's a kind of a firewall between the admission process and the review around admission and your application for financial aid. Is that true, Ryan?
That's very true. I think at most institutions, although we in the financial aid office have very good working relationships with the admissions office, those institutions who state that they are need blind, as opposed to need aware, need conscious, or any of the other terminology that is out there these days, most institutions who are need blind, and by that I mean the student is admitted or not admitted based on his or her own merit for that particular institution. Those of us that are need blind, and Boston University being one of those, one of these institutions, the student is admitted on his or her own merit, then a financial aid award is determined based on, be it a merit award based on the academic merit of the student, or a need-based award based on the financial need of the family and of the student. And so there is that that firewall to where certainly the admissions role process plays a role in many cases of a financial aid package based on merit or some other types of scholarships and grants. But there, for those of us that are need blind, there is not a direct contact.
So the concern about the numbers of schools that may be listed on the profile form or whatever and being seen by the financial aid officer at another school may not, in fact, influence the admission or, in essence, may not even influence the award of the monies.
And it would be foolish for a parent not to apply for aid for fear of not getting in.
Absolutely.
If you need money to
Absolutely.
Go to college, it would be a foolish move not to apply. Because the second year when you apply, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, having not applied the first year, that you're going to be first on the list.
Very good.
And that's a big point. So if you need money, be honest, be upfront, and apply. And if your child doesn't get in because of it, it probably isn't the right place to go.
Let's take another question. Tanya?
John Meeker, Atlanta, Georgia. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, John.
Yes, please. Thank you very much for taking my question and for the show. Could you tell me how early admission plays into this, and whether it's whether you should hold off if you had a child that's academically and or athletically gifted?
You're asking really an admissions question or a financial aid one?
Financial aid specifically.
Well, there are two theories. One is, if your child really wants to go to this school and you, if it's early decision, remember, you're committed to the school. The only reason you can back out is if they don't give you financial aid and, or they don't meet your need, excuse me. If you apply early decision and the college does not meet your need, you have a right to back out from that early decision. If you can't afford the school, based on what you may find out is your expected family contribution, you know, based on the cost of the college minus your family contribution. If you can't afford the school, then it makes no sense to go through this process and apply early decision and find out you can't go there. So think about what you can afford and apply early. Now, we have heard a lot of schools say that put yourself up front and say, I really want to go to the school, you're going to get bare scholarship needs met. And they say, if you wait and apply later, and this is just rumor, I have yet to see it happen, that if you wait and apply later, that you're more apt to get more aid. I have not seen it happen. I've only read about it in the papers, and I've only heard about it as rumors. I think aid is aid, and if you meet the college meets your need because you're applying early decision, you have X need. The need is the same in October and November as it is in May and in April and May. So what's the difference? I wouldn't use that to hold up my early decision. I know that's complicated, but...
I think I understand. So there would be no disadvantage to applying for early admission. In other words, the criteria
is exactly the same.
Would be the same.
But I would do an EFC with us first and find out, you know, what your need is, to find out whether you really can afford to go early decision and find out you're going to get very little.
If you have any apprehension about applying early decision, my advice would be is contact the school and talk with the admissions folks. They'll know a bit about your child, hopefully some academic records on hand, and they'll be able to explain to you their policies for admitting students on an early decision basis, as well as how their financial aid process works. So if you have questions, contact the school.
I understand. Thank you very much for, again.
You're welcome.
Ryan, one quick thing. Does it make sense to talk to the financial aid office when you're applying early decision?
Most financial aid offices, it really makes no difference.
Okay.
Be you applying for early decision versus applying regular decision. Our financial aid policies and practices hold true, be it early decision, early action, whatever you want to call it, on into regular decision. Now, of course, one question that I get out in financial aid nights and at high schools and whatnot is making sure that we clarify the difference between applying early and applying early decision, meaning applying early and applying on time versus late and missing the deadlines, which we've talked about earlier tonight. But Andrea, no, I don't think there are financial aid offices, or many of them anyway. I've only read about it like you in the newspaper.
We've yet to see it happen, but we've only heard rumor. And I'll find out maybe this spring, I'll finally hear somebody that's actually had an experience, but I haven't found it to be true.
My daughter was early accepted or early admission into University of Chicago, and I still got waxed, so I just wondered whether I would have been better off doing it later.
It doesn't sound that way.
No. Your need is your need. It isn't going to change in the springtime.
Understand.
I'm sorry.
Let's take another question. We only have about 8 minutes to the program.
Alexandria, Virginia, please go ahead with your question. Kevin Lewis?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had phone on mute. Yes, this may have been covered. I know it was covered before, but I just want to be sure I understand the deadlines. And I think one of may have already been passed here. The profile that's available through the College Board and then the FAFSA. I understand those are two different forms that have to be filled out, but I was a little confused on when is the best time to get those done.
Now.
The first thing you should do is take a list, look at the list of colleges that your child has put together. And with that list, put down the earliest deadline for both the FAFSA and the profile form and try to meet those deadlines. And so there are some institutions who may get the information a little bit earlier. You've met the earliest deadlines for both of those institutions, for all of those institutions, for both of those forms. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Do we have another question, Tanya?
Linda Vaughn, Stoneham, Mass. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. I'd like to test out something that I've heard. It's regarding assets. In the case where you are a co-signature on a checking account and a savings account for a parent, the parent is claiming the taxes, and you would just be a co-signature in the case of unforeseen circumstances to be able to... you know, pay bills with that.
You mean a guardianship of a parent in your... I would think that's something a financial aid office has to know.
My understanding is if you're not reporting it on your income tax as far as the interest, then you don't need to report the funds as an asset.
I think she's right.
Yeah,
Mike, you're right.
Mike is saying yes. Ryan is saying yes.
Okay.
So it depends, I guess, on whose tax ID number that gets reported
to. Right.
And just to further clarify, If, in fact, the directions, the instructions on the free application on the profile, as Mike and Andrea have pointed out, would instruct you to exclude in that particular case if you're not in receipt of the interest and it's not going to appear on your tax returns or so on. Vice versa, if you are in a sort of a dual ownership, custodial accounts and whatnot, where you are the beneficiary and you are instructed to include the information on the forms, if there are special circumstances surrounding those custodial accounts or those family accounts, then by all means you need to make sure that the institution understands that and is aware of what some of the liabilities and issues surrounding those accounts are going to be. Because the institution is something we really haven't talked much about tonight, but keep in mind, one of the bottom line things you should remember as you're applying for financial aid and going through this process is that an institution in just about every single data element and variable we have here has what's known as professional judgment and can make some decisions that are best suited for the family, best suited for the student, in order to make sure that the picture is as clean and as clear as it possibly can be. So even if the directions tell you to do one thing, an institution has some professional ability to bypass, to override, or to make a different decision.
Okay. And as a follow-up to that, on a situation where you own an investment property and you have 50% ownership with someone else, the other person is claiming the interest on the mortgage on their tax return, is that something that I would need to report?
The first thing is if that other person's not part of the household, is that true?
Right.
Okay. If you own half of it, regardless of who's getting the tax deduction, you still own half of it. That tax deduction negotiation is something that you and that other party predetermined.
Right.
So say, for instance, it's a piece of land and you own half of it, you need to report that under other real estate.
Okay. This is about 10 years old now, and the other person has always reported it on their tax return.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah?
If you sell that property tomorrow, how much do you get?
50%.
Okay.
You answered your own question.
Okay. I just want to be sure.
Okay.
That's not what I heard from Northeastern.
Well,
financial aid.
I suppose if you ask the question or the institution gave you their answer, report it the way they asked you to or suggested you to, but I think I think it may have been the way you asked the question versus the way certainly Mike, who's very close to this, heard your responses.
And I guess I came away with it all. If it's not reported on your tax return, somebody else is claiming it against their tax ID, then you don't need to claim it. You don't need to report it on the profile or the FAFSA.
Well, you answered that question
already. That's why I wanted to test it out.
Okay.
The only thing I can say is that it's potential that that particular institution had more data about you than we do, and they may know something that we don't know. So I would not mind if you went back and said, well, you know, I talked with Mike Bartini from the College Board, and he said this, and it contradicted. At least you will have, and they say, you probably didn't tell them this. Then at least you feel sure that the information you got is correct.
Right.
Yeah, I think we want to remind everybody this program is for informational purposes. I think everybody's circumstances are different, and you may want to talk directly with institutions, or you can certainly even call FAFSA, and they have people who are able to answer your particular questions and give you more of an official word than I think the conversation we've been trying to have this evening.
There is a number, 1-800-4-FED-AID, that you can call, and the U.S. government financial aid, the federal aid office, will answer some of those questions.
Okay, great, thanks.
All right. Tanya, I think we have time for maybe one or two more questions.
Kevin Devendito, Andover, Mass., please go ahead with your question.
Hi, my question is a quick one. When I'm filling out the financial forms, and I have to report, like, savings amounts that we have in savings. Are we required to report our save plan, our 401k?
No. If any official retirement account does not get listed as an asset on the FAFSA or the profile form. Remember, you may have money in a money market account that you're saying that's for retirement, but if it's not an official retirement, qualified retirement plan, then you need to report it. But 401Ks, 403Bs, IRAs, the cumulative values of those particular accounts do not need to be listed.
I try and help parents understand that better by saying anything you have to pay that 10% penalty if you withdraw before you're 59 and a half. And the minute I say 10% penalty before you're 59 and a half, they know what money I'm talking about. And that sort of clarifies it for people on the phone. I hope that clarifies it for you.
But don't forget, as you put your package together and you consider where your assets come from, check with Benefits Express and other resources about the possibility of taking loans on your 401k at very favorable rates that, in fact, may aid in being able to meet some of your obligations. There are certainly other sources to consider, but that's one of the sources of loan money.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Another question, Tanya?
Tom Conrad, Marlboro, Mass. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, on that subject that you were just talking about, does that also include these new Roth IRAs?
That's a question that's up for discussion. Remember, when you're filling out your applications for 98-99, you're going to be using 97 data. Roth IRAs don't take place or haven't taken place until January 1st of 98. So it's an issue that the financial aid community is going to be dealing with over the next year. And next year at this time, you can ask that question again.
Okay,
thanks. That goes for all the new tax laws. They all start January 1 of this year at the earliest. So you need to understand that all the data and all the information isn't in yet. So we've got a lot to learn.
Well, thank you very much. I think we ought to take a second and try to wrap this up. I want to thank our guests this evening and also to remind people some of the key phone numbers and other information that we've provided to you. I want to thank Mike Bartini, Director of Financial Aid Services for the College Board, who's joined us. I also want to express our appreciation to Ryan Williams, Director of the Office of Financial Aid Assistance for Boston University, which certainly, I think, provides a good representative sense of major institutions and certainly smaller institutions in trying to wrestle with those tough decisions for those students that really want to go to school and the parents who are caught between those financial kind of middle grounds between that $40,000 and $80,000 or more combined income of the family as to what to do. And that's going to be a tough role for you to play in saying yes and saying no to some students who, in the end, can't afford to go but deserve to go. And certainly Andrea Glovsky with Work Family Directions, who provides an enormous amount of help to many of our employees who call the service directly. Let me remind you of some of the numbers and some of the services. Work Family Directions can be reached at 1-800-635-0606, so you can ask some particular questions or go through some of the particular financial aid planner and other kinds of things. Also, information regarding the FAFSA can be reached at 1-800-433-3243 if you have particular questions about the form and some line items on the form. And, of course, for CSS profile, you can call in terms of registering for the profile at 1-800-776-6888 or on the web at collegeboard.org, www.collegeboard.org, all one word. And, of course, we have information on our website internally, our Work Life Connections website, which is reached through the HR homepage, www.hr.ecom/worklife. We'll bring you right to our website. I want to remind people that this is going to be replayed this evening and will be replayed on other dates. Eventually, the tapes will be in our lending library that's also available on our program. Again, I want to thank you all for joining us. I hope this was helpful for you all, and good evening.